I cannot believe it's been 10 years since 9/11/2001. I can close my eyes and replay the events of that day like it was yesterday. I remember going to work. It was a Tuesday morning. The weather was wonderful. The sun was shining, 80 degrees, blue skies, just absolutely perfect. I got in my car and I drove to the train station like I always do, and I took the 7:21 train. I went in a little late that day because I went to the Yankee game the night before with my good friends Josephine and Danny. I sometimes think what would have happened if I went in at my normal time. By the time I arrived at Penn Station, the terrorist, Mohammed Atta, and four other hijackers were already in the air on American Airlines Flight 11 from Boston to LA. The flight attendant alerts American Airlines that the cockpit wasn't answering and that people had been stabbed, as well as flight attendants, and that the plane was hijacked. Atta, the terrorist Atta, was flying the plane and he makes a 100-degree turn towards New York City, with its final destination being Tower 1 of the World Trade Center. Around this time, I exit my train, I walk to the subway station, I put my token into the turnstile, and I rushed up the stairs and I jumped on the one train to the World Trade Center, and the doors on the subway closed right behind me. I wonder what would have happened if I would have missed that subway. I work at Four World Trade Center, and I had a quarter office on the sixth floor, which was the top floor, which is about 50 feet from Tower 2 of the World Trade Center. In my office was my computer, my work files, my personal belongings, pictures of my family, my wife Patricia, my daughters Gina and Gabriella. And I never could have imagined on that day that in 90 minutes, my office and everything in it would be crushed and never seen again. At 8:46 a.m., Flight 11, with Atta behind the wheel of the plane, crashes at roughly 466 miles an hour in the north face of the North Tower of the World Trade Center, between floors 93 and 99. People below the stairwells on those floors started to evacuate, but no one above the impact zone was able to do so. It was around 8:50 a.m. and I was still underground on the subway, and I was wondering why my train had stopped. I was unaware of the tragedy that had just occurred outside. There happened to be a transit authority worker on my subway car. Over the radio, I thought I heard a plane just hit the World Trade Center. And after a few minutes with my train being at a standstill, I asked him what happened. He said that a small plane had just crashed into the World Trade Center and that they were routing my subway to another track. My first thoughts were that a pilot flying a small plane had a heart attack and crashed into the World Trade Center. I was thinking it was a terrible accident. The trainman stated that the next stop would be Park Place and that my subway would be diverted from the World Trade Center. And since I traveled to New York for 16 years, I knew that the best thing to do would be for me to get off at Park Place and walk towards the World Trade Center from that point. There were announcements made at the South Tower of the World Trade Center, which was the tower that was closest to my office, that people should remain in the building and that that tower was secure. Some people don't hear the announcement, some ignore it and evacuate anyway. They were the lucky ones. Unfortunately, the people that did stay in that tower, a lot of them died. So this was the second plane to hit the World Trade Center, and it hit between floors 77 and 85. Parts of the plane, you know, left the building. Parts of the building flew six blocks away, which was right near where I was exiting the subway. At the same time that all this was going on, President Bush was in a classroom at Buckle Elementary School in Sarasota. And this was a real coincidence because I eventually moved to Sarasota 1.5 years later. When I exited the subway, I was walking towards the stairs of the subway tunnel, and I heard screams and a loud explosion. I walked up the stairs from underground. My eyes were glued to the World Trade Center. Smoke and fire were shooting from the buildings. I was surprised to see what damage there was to both buildings. My first thoughts were that a plane had hit Tower 1 and then crashed below into Tower 2. And I was stunned and frozen by the sight. I then realized I needed to get to my office building to find out what needed to be done for my job. We were required to have a disaster recovery plan in place to deal with disasters to keep our system up and running. We actually practiced and simulated disasters a few times a year, ever since 1993, when there was a previous terror attack at the World Trade Center on February 26, 1993. This was when a truck bomb was detonated below the North Tower of the World Trade Center, and the bomb was intended to knock the North Tower into the South Tower, bringing down both towers and killing thousands of people. Thank God it failed, but six people did die and thousands were injured. I continued to walk down Church Street towards the World Trade Center. I needed to call my wife to let her know I was okay. Unfortunately, my cell phone didn't work. I just kept getting a busy signal, and I just kept walking and dialing. What amazed me was that no one was stopping me from walking towards the World Trade Center. I got to one block of the tower, and the police then at that point told me I had to go one avenue east onto Broadway. I was behind the Hilton Millennium Hotel, and I lost sight of the towers for a minute. But somehow I could still see the images of the two towers burning. Police cars and fire trucks were speeding down the street. I saw a payphone, so I went up to the payphone and tried to dial, but I just kept on getting a busy signal. It wasn't working. I then walked down to Liberty Street and made a right towards the World Trade Center. The building I worked at was right on this street, just two blocks away. I reached Church Street, and, you know, I was allowed to cross right over into the World Trade Center complex. My building was just a few feet away. I looked at it. It was intact. The fire was right above, and pieces of the two World Trade Center were falling on the building. I saw no one was entering or leaving the building, and so I decided to cross over Liberty Street to my building at 130 Liberty. And my assumption this time was that this event would be very similar to 93, that I would just go into the building and work there. And what I didn't realize at that time was that this situation was much, much worse. I entered the lobby of the building and I saw the head of the data center operations, and they told me that everyone had already left and they were heading to our contingency site in New Jersey at Exchange Place in Jersey City. I leave Deutsche Bank building. I cross, you know, and across the street, I look up at the World Trade Center, and I just can't believe what I'm seeing. I'm looking at my building. I'm looking at where I used to work. I see pieces of the building falling. There's an officer standing at the corner, and I asked him what happened. He said a plane crashed, and he told me that, you know, I had to go south to Battery Park. I asked him if the ferries were operating at the World Financial Center to New Jersey, and he said no, that everyone must go to Battery Park. So I decided to go see if the ferries were running to New Jersey, and that's where my contingency site was. And I figured I would be safe and out of Manhattan, and that's where I really needed to go for my job anyway. So only if the ferries were running, this was a good plan. So I decide to walk towards the ferry, and I walk behind my building at 130 Liberty onto Albany Street. When I got on this road, it was strange because everyone was going south and I was the only one going west towards the World Financial Center. And I'm by myself and it was surreal. And I looked down the street and it was like a war zone. There were papers everywhere on the ground, papers flying in the air like a ticker tape parade. There were clops of red piles of what looked like raw chopped meat. I take a few steps and stop because I'm about to step on something. And I look down, and right below my feet was half of a man's arm. I thought about my family, and I realized how worried they must be. And I tried my cell phone again, but it still wasn't working. I then started to pick up my pace. I arrived at the West Side Highway and could not believe what was on this road. It was hundreds and hundreds of fire trucks and police cars and ambulances. They were racing down the street, and I look over to my right, and there was just a man standing there on the West Side Highway looking up at the towers. I was surprised to see him just standing there, and I wasn't sure what I was looking at, but I did see things falling from the tower. I didn't realize it then, but it probably was people jumping, because at that day, as many as 250 people that were trapped in the North Tower jumped to their deaths because they were trapped by the fire and smoke on the upper floors and had no way out, and they preferred to jump rather than suffer being burnt to death. It's now around 9:55 a.m., and I realized that I could get there in 5 minutes if I could run. So I decided to run up to the ferry, and then I see another sight, which is hundreds of pairs of women's high heel shoes all over the path. There's briefcases and bags, and I pass a few people on the path, but they're all going in the opposite direction than I am. I asked them if the ferry is running. They said they didn't know. I started to run faster. I get to the port of the ferry. There are about 150 people on board, and the engine of the ferry is running. There were also people just standing around looking up at the tower, not even thinking about getting on the ferry. I reached the ferry and jumped on, and I realized it wasn't even crowded. I go outside on the deck, I look up at the towers, and at that second, at 9:59 and 4 seconds, I hear a tremendous rumble and roar as the south tower of the World Trade Center begins to collapse. The top floors seem to be falling on top of the one below, and one by one, and then it collapses, and it seems to pick up speed about halfway down. I can close my eyes today and visualize it, even though it's 10 years later. Pieces of the tower come flying off and fall on top of the World Financial Center about 500 feet away from where I was. The roar of the collapse goes silent, and then the tremendous white cloud of smoke filled with pulverized concrete starts to rise and come towards us and the ferry. You couldn't tell if it was part of the building. I've never seen anything like it. It was terrifying. The people operating the ferry started to yell, "Let's go, let's get out of here." Then quickly they untied the boat, and that the people standing at the dock started to jump into the boat. The smoke was only 20 feet away and coming fast. The boat started to pull out. People on the dock couldn't make it onto the boat. They actually jumped into the Hudson River. I saw them land in the water, but then they were covered by the cloud, and the smoke was catching up to the ferry. was now only 10 feet away, 5 feet away. The ferry started to pick up speed, and we started to outrun the smoke. I looked behind at the World Trade Center site. It looked like someone had just dropped a nuclear bomb. I wonder to this day what happened to those people on the dock. If I would have gotten to the ferry seconds later, that would have been me. I got off the ferry in New Jersey, and it was like a ghost town. There was no one around. I run to my building. My building was directly across at the Hudson River from the World Trade Center. I looked at the World Trade Center, and it now became clear that the second tower was no longer there. I couldn't believe my eyes. I stopped and saw the North Tower of the World Trade Center begin to collapse. It was around 10:28. I got to my building, walk inside. We had a contingency site in the cafeteria of the building in New Jersey, which was right on the Hudson River with a row of windows from the floor to the ceiling overlooking the World Trade Center. It was a front row live view of the World Trade Center. My building, 4 World Trade Center, was also destroyed in the collapse. I head back up to the data center to start the process of bringing up the systems. I see a phone and dial my home number, busy. I dial again, busy. Dial again, busy. Dial 0, busy. Dial 0, it rings. I get an operator on the phone. I ask her to connect me to my home. She tells me all lines are down and she doesn't know if she can. I tell her my situation. I just survived the World Trade Center. I've not been able to contact my wife and she doesn't know if I'm dead or alive. She listens to my story and tells me to hold on. After a few minutes, I hear the phone ring. The operator comes back on and tells me she's connecting me to my house. I hear my wife pick up the phone and I say, "Hi, it's me. I'm okay." Silence. She then hands the phone to my mother-in-law. I talk to my mother-in-law. I tell her, I'm okay. I didn't get hurt. I'm in New Jersey and that I'll be there for a while. She tells me everything is fine at the house and that my wife just can't talk right now. I tell her that I'll call back later, and I realize then it was much harder for my wife, sitting in my house for hours not knowing if I was dead or alive, than it was for me. All my friends and family knew that I worked at the World Trade Center and called to see if I was okay. Friends and from college even called that I hadn't talked to in years. My wife kept on saying she didn't know. She didn't hear from me because I couldn't reach her. My wife knew I wasn't someone that would run. I didn't in 1993. She had the tougher situation of being at home wondering, what would she tell our children if I never called? I got the systems up around 1 p.m. and headed down to the operations area. I looked out the window and I could still see the towers burning. I then see fighter jet planes flying down the Hudson River. I cannot believe the buildings were gone. Unfortunately, it wasn't over. I was still the only technologist at the site, and there were many problems to deal with. Around 9 p.m., other people from my job started to come into the office. We were happy everyone was okay. Everyone in my department survived without major injuries. Miraculously, only one person from my company died when the building collapsed. It was now around 11:30, and President Bush entered into his journal, "The Pearl Harbor of the 21st century took place today. We think it's Osama bin Laden." I worked throughout the night. I finally went home at 8 p.m. the next day. I was up 38 hours. I arrived home, hugged my wife and kids, and thank God I was alive. When I think back on this experience, I realize how lucky I am to be alive. I was under the tower less than 15 minutes before it came down. I made it to the ferry seconds before the building collapsed. What would have happened if I went in normal time or missed the subway
or missed the ferry. I truly feel that God was watching out for me that day. If it wasn't for 9/11, we probably would not be living in Sarasota. The funny part of this is that the terrorists had a house in Sarasota when they were taking flight training lessons at the Venice Airport. Another coincidence is that the terrorists paid for their flight lessons through the computer system that I managed. Also, on 9/11, George Bush was in Booker Elementary in Sarasota. There have been many changes that have occurred since 9/11. The terrorist task force, homeland security, building safety codes, air travel is very inconvenient now. We get searched and restricted on what we can carry aboard a plane. We can't even bring a bottle of shampoo. We can no longer drive to Canada or Mexico with just a license. Passports are now required. Going into government buildings now require going through metal detectors, and there's much, much more security. Even our dams are more secure for fear of terrorist attacks. You can no longer go near the New York Stock Exchange in New York without seeing security. Even our public transit systems have safeguards against terrorist attacks. For the last 10 years, America has been at war with terrorists. We have lost thousands of American soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, and many more have come home maimed, and their lives will never be the same as a result of 9/11. On this 10th anniversary of 9/11, Americans should pause to remember the lives lost that day and the sacrifices made by so many. We need to remember and honor the sacrifices made by those since 9/11 in fight against terrorism. Most of all, we need to stand proud and remember that we are all Americans, regardless of color, faith, political philosophy, or anything else. We are all Americans, and more than ever, we need to stand united today as we stood united on September 11th and the days immediately following. 10 years have passed, and there's still much to grieve. There are lives that were lost on that terrifying, tragic day. 2,977 victims in the towers and the Pentagon and on the planes, and 415 law enforcement officers and firefighters were killed. Did the attacks alter my ways of seeing the world? Yes. I'm much more aware of my surroundings now. My life has changed forever. When I'm on a plane or in public areas or even on a train, I'm much more aware of my surroundings. There are very few days when I don't think about 9/11. It was a life-changing event. I can count my blessings, and I realize every day is a gift. But 9/11 did not shake my core beliefs. I still believe in God. I still love my friends and family, especially my wife Patricia and my daughters Gina and Gabriella. I also still believe in people. There is a steel cross that was found at the World Trade Center site that day. The cross is still there today. To me, the cross is a symbol of comfort that Christ was with everyone for the pain and suffering on that terrible day. This cross is also a symbol of forgiveness and strength.
I'll never forget 9/11.